go, I think I'm down to my last slide here. We go back to another early map, and these early maps, you have everybody in this room, I'm sure, very aware that you can't do absolute anything off these early maps, but there are some clues that you can get. And if we go back to this map, this is the 1733 map, and they all show sort of the same pattern. If you just look at the dynamic or the geometry of this system right here, the island today, the north end of the island, comes way down here with respect to both the barrier and this system right here, the mainland Dare County system. This would suggest that it goes way to the north. Up here, Roanoke Inlet's way to the north at this time. They had our shallows over here. Stumpy Point Lake was an inland lake. Today we know that this shoreline sits way back here. And I would argue that these channels had taken off a large hunk of the north end of this island as this thing came down like this. And what we're looking at is the sort of maybe someplace in there with respect to what it was in the 1585. So in this aerial photo, you can't see the channel coming around here, but it comes around about here, which would be the edge of the pedestal. I think the old island probably continued considerably further than that, and it's been eroded back, been eroded in, and shrunk in on all sides. This has changed dramatically over here, and there's no reason in the world why this hasn't changed dramatically back in here. And so as we try to interpret the history of the early several hundred years of the development of Roanoke Island, I think we have to take into consideration what the climate's doing, what sea level's doing, and there's definite indications that these were not the same as they are today. The present, all the evidence we have suggests that the present rates of erosion that we're experiencing on the barriers and the estuarine shorelines is not something that's been going on ad infinitum here in this Holocene sea level rise. You can't just multiply the present rates times four.
Very briefly summarize the archaeological work that has been done primarily on the north end of Roanoke Island. I'm not getting into any detail, but to simply give you some generalities and with respect to potential loss of site and where we might go next. The geological map you see in front of you somewhat covers the entire north end. Let me quickly point out where the sites have been located in the past and where we think they are now. Going from Northwest Point over here, this is primarily a prehistoric site that is almost totally, well, not almost totally, it is completely gone. And probably dates to the period somewhere between 800 and 1200 AD. Then coming up here to Nose Point, where we began our walk this morning, this is an extensive Indian village, of course, the old Doe Farm and a variety of other historic phenomena. And then, of course, to Fort Raleigh itself. And between here and here, we have an awful lot of evidence of Native American village information from the 800 AD on up in time to the age of the colony. And then there is another site located way over here on Balm Point that you see on the very right-hand side of the map. And there is sketchy evidence in between all along the shoreline, as I mentioned on the walk this morning. Here on Pratt Claw Spit, there is archaeological evidence, but it is secondary. It is the type of material that has simply been eroded and rolled along the shore and has ended up, as the sand has been deposited here from elsewhere on the north end of the island, so have the archaeological materials. And we will sort of concentrate on each one of these spots as we go through this. Very briefly, the first archaeological work on the north end of the island was that by Talcott Williams in 1895, and what he did, of course, was to do test excavations in Fort Raleigh itself. But he did record for the first time the Indian villages on the Collington phase, the Algonquin villages at Northwest Point, at Doe's Point, and Balm Point. He, in fact, is our only reference to the site at Balm Point, which yielded some burials, at least in that period of time, and for which we have absolutely no evidence. No one has ever collected material, so it's somewhat of an enigma, and probably dates to an earlier time period. And of course, he talked about other places on the island, like the burial mound near Indian Hole that we have yet to locate, in spite of a number of searches for it, and then a site down at Wanchese, the Tillett site, that we have excavated in 1979. William Hague's survey in 1958, which generally took in the entire area, was a naval contract to find sites that were contemporaneous with the lost colony. He was not necessarily successful in that, but it gave us our first broad-based survey data for both Roanoke Island and northeastern North Carolina. And then in 1977, the National Park Service-funded survey by Tim Thompson, executed by the North Carolina Division of Archives and History, that added very little new information. It did give some of the graveyards on the North Shore here site numbers and that kind of thing, but did not substantially add to our base. And of course, most of the things that have been done on the island, you know about at Fort Raleigh, beginning with Harrington's work from the 40s through the 60s, and of course the work by Noel Human and his group since that time, and then the North National Park Service excavations by John Ehrenhardt and others in the 80s in conjunction with the 400th anniversary. And then there have been sporadic things by ourselves at East Carolina and by various contract agencies having to do with spot investigations. Although during a major grant that we had from the 400th anniversary group in 1983 and 84, we did do some test excavations to begin to confirm and deny some evidence, like Northwest Point, the fact that it was all eroded, and also to do some testing to negate some other places. So much of the evidence we have is negative. Some of it is positive, some of it is ambiguous, but I think the final statement at this moment in time that can be made about the archaeology of Roanoke Island is there has not been enough. On the North Shore, we have evidence of occupations going back to 11,000 years ago. This Dalton Point is indicative of the earliest material we have. This is collected from the area you walked this morning between Doe's Point and the Waterside Theater. In the same collection by a gentleman named Tom McDonald, who lives here on the island and fortunately collects this area after storms, we have a great deal of information. In his collection is material ranging all the way from this early 11,000 year ago point all the way up through the entire sequence of prehistoric cultures, and of course some material that belongs to the historic period. But this gives you an idea, following up on the statements made this morning about the stratigraphy, on that land surface is everything from 11,000 years ago right on up to the present time. Obviously, this would have been a point inland. In fact, the shoreline was where it was. The shoreline at that time would have been along the old Roanoke Channel, and this point represents something far back inland from that time period. Now, we can go through these site areas, and we'll talk about them a little bit at a time. This is Northwest Point, and you see here the old Sandpiper Trace facility before the modern development. And this is Doe's Point and Fort Raleigh over there. This one has been noted. In fact, Harrington and Hague both refer to this as being the site that might have been contemporaneous with the lost colony. Although it has material from the same time period, which has come from the shoreline all along the point there and on back here to this marsh development, the material all dates to the early Collington phase, as we call it, which would have been the Algonquin cultures, but would have been prior to 1200 AD. I think this site was already abandoned and not being used, except possibly some field systems that may have existed by the time the colony was here. So material from this site is early Collington phase rather than contemporaneous with the lost colony, or with the Raleigh colony. This is a shot of the Northwest Point shoreline area to show you the type and extent of erosion. The trees are being taken out, and our test excavations inland from this point showed absolutely nothing. Just total lack of any cultural information whatsoever. And from that, plus the shoreline collections, we can infer that the entire site is gone. These are the types of materials, these are a series of projectile points from the shoreline collections there. All of these belong to the late Woodland period. Some of them possibly a little earlier, but primarily late Woodland period, and these were dated between 800 and about 1200 AD. So that site will have, any further information will have to come out of the water. Any developments on the northwest point will not really affect us anymore. Those Point has a general site number that we call DR21, which actually applies to the entire shoreline. It was assigned by Bill Hayes' survey and applies to the shoreline between the waterside theater and Dove's Point. Eventually, we may be able to refine the distribution. But here, we have the type of evidence that we've been talking about on the trip this morning. You see here, it's a little bit off the screen over here. This is Northwest Point down here, I believe, and this is where the road comes up to Dove's Point, and then we look along the shoreline that we walked this morning, you can see the extent of the erosion, and on around here toward the pier. This is probably the location of the Roanoke village that Barlow visited in 1584, that was here contemporaneous with Ralph Lane's 1585-86 expedition, and whose inhabitants very gladly gave Ralph Lane the fields that he could use for agricultural purposes, simply because they were probably exhausted at that time, and during 1586 that village was abandoned. In order to have the exchange going on that, to the extent that we think it went on between Lane's colony, particularly, and the Roanoke, the village would have had to be in relatively close proximity to the colony area. Regardless of the fort itself, there is evidence, as you already know from Melanie's work, of the colony activities in the area where the fort now stands. This village, right pictured here on the debris engraving, which does not necessarily put it in an active position, but this village, we think, was the one that had it around those points. That there is a gap between that material and Northwest Point site. It was confirmed in 83 by some tests we did along the north, along the western edge of the National Park Service boundary. Those test excavations yielded absolutely nothing. So that we know this is not part of the same site that existed at Northwest Point. You see here the old road going out through the area there, and you see here the first evidence we have in 1840 of Native American materials in the area. This is the plot of the 1840 shoreline survey done by Gwynn, who was then the surveyor general from North Carolina, I believe. This appears in Cheeseman's historic study of shoreline changes. What we did in 1983 was to simply take Gwynn's notebook and plot it out into its reality directions. And this is Dove's Point as it looked in 1840 with the Dove Farm here. And of course, this little notation over here with a gravestone is Indian graveyard. The implication there is that they were skeletons eroding from that same bank that you looked at this morning, and this, of course, is our earliest confirmation. And then, of course, this is the same point that that was looked at by Talcott Williams later on, and then in 1965, J.C. Harrington, in conjunction with the work he was doing at Fort Raleigh at the time, salvaged a burial from this same place that we pointed this out to you this morning. These are numbers of very poorly preserved human bones. They're bundles. This is a typical ossuary of the pattern that we get through the Algonquin cultures in the late prehistoric period. Can't see it all, but up at the right-hand top corner, you can see the gray soil that indicates that soil zone that we've all been talking about. And obviously, this pit intrudes down from the bottom of that zone. Also, discovered and recorded in terms of surface were a number of features or other types of pits that Harrington observed but did not excavate. Those were inshore toward the land side from this excavation. And we cannot yet find this material. It's somewhere in the bowels of the Smithsonian. I'd love to be able to look at it. There are no cultural materials with it, but the burial type itself implies that this is, in fact, an Algonquin village. The two evidences of burial, plus the shoreline collection, this group of celts, this woodworking tool, it's an adze used for woodworking, it's bipointed, one end of the left-hand side is broken away. The smoking pipe and polystone gorgets. This type of material indicates an extensive village, all of the complex behavior that one associates with a permanent habitation, totally unlike the material found in the Fort Raleigh excavations that is really pottery that we've come to the conclusion was essentially borrowed by the English from the Indians. And there is no, and even Harrington noted that there was no evidence of village material, of refuge, or anything else that indicated Indian occupation, but I think that ultimately ethnocentricity won out, and he had to make the statement that there were Indians here before and after the fort, when in reality the Indians simply lent the materials to the English, and certainly in the Lane expedition had no potters with them and needed vessels. But here along the shoreline between the theater and those points is all of the evidence of a very complex and long-standing village. And of course, all of this is from the shoreline. One of the things we do not know is how much is actually left in the ground, if anything at all, would be interesting to see. And here at Fort Raleigh itself, I'm not going to talk about the Fort Raleigh excavations, but those have not been mine, but most of it is centered on the fort and the surroundings. You see here a shoreline shot with the Lost Colony Theater. This is before the stone was put in, before that revetment was built, which now spans the entire backside of the Waterside Theater, ends right here, and this is that little eroded area. You can barely see that concrete bag groin that was put in, or breakwater that was put in to protect this little embayment even before the revetment went in, and you can see the extent to which it is eroded. This is that, that big high dune area, and right out in here are the locations of the barrel and log wells and the iron axe. This is a plot in 1982 when Phil Evans located these things, got them out of the water and staked them. He told us all about it, and when we were working here in 1983, and this work, by the way, is from the Cultural Resource Management investigation of the Roanoke Island Historical Association Center for the Arts. It was not put on this plot, as you can see from walking the area today, but this was one of the potential sites, and that's why we did archaeological work here. In the process of that excavation, we recorded, transit recorded, the locations of the two stakes that were still left. That was the iron axe right here. And notice our reference point, that is that concrete covering of the culvert that drains the water from the piping pot. And this little triangle represents our reference point on that. So these positions can be plotted with reference to that, and of course the more permanent marker that we used in the parking lot up here. This is the iron axe, and this is the barrel well. You will notice way up at the top, the log well was just outside that little concrete breakwater, and the stake for that was gone by the time we got around to recording it. And this is somewhat ambiguous, but in the general vicinity where it occurred. Of the things that still exist, the log well still is preserved, and we have measured that and photographed it, and it needs preservation, but that will be accomplished in the near future. The barrel apparently is gone, disintegrated, that cannot be found, and the iron axe you will see right here. This has been preserved in the Southeast Regional Center of Tallahassee. And all that remains is about an 11 centimeter long section of it. This is the happening in here, so we have only one limb of the axe left, and much of it is a little bit away. But it is the proper time period for the colony. And I might note that both the barrel well and the log well yielded radiocarbon dates in the 16th century, certainly contemporaneous to the fourth. So this is the best evidence we have, along with some English green glazed pottery contemporaneous with the period that we collected from. In fact, let me go back a moment. These dots across here are bucket samples. What we did was actually dig up the bottom of the sound, run it through sifter frames, and that's where we got the collections, rather than from along the beach. That's where we got the collections by which we could get some idea of what went on in this area. These are not materials that have rolled along the coast like those at Crab Cross Pit. We got both Native American pottery, the Collington phase pottery that is contemporaneous to the fourth, the green glazed English sherds, and a number of other things from this series of bucket transects that we actually did. I suggest this is probably one of the best ways that we're going to have to get material from along the North Shoreline, simply because we can't be out here all the time to monitor conditions when collecting the bottom is exactly right. It takes a particular type of storm. So this may be our ultimate answer to the sampling. But these things obviously are contemporaneous. There is absolutely nothing over on that side. Every test we did over there was negative. This side, we did not test. This is a surface feature. We didn't put in a too small test or nothing, but this is a goat farm feature from the old farmstead that was here before the report. So those things certainly apply. This is the stratigraphy you saw this morning, and the barrel and the iron axe were right out here. But to reiterate what all of my colleagues, Dolan and Briggs, have said about erosion, this is high bank erosion. The colony was up here at this dark brown and gray level, and anything that is out here is out of context, and it is really foolish to try to find things, except things like well bottoms out here. This is the kind of thing that destroys context, and you can salvage the materials, but not the actual structures themselves. But this is a picture of one of the test squares from the inland area, just behind that dune stratigraphy on the beach. And you can see here that the old land surface is absolutely buried. This is a pine tree root that we did a point for out this morning. And what you have here is just completely sterile material. Absolutely no evidence of occupation. So, we need to look at particular areas and begin to isolate things. The other side of the erosion continuum, if you were in fact looking for sites that would be slowly drowned, covered with sediments, and therefore intact, then you would look in situations like this. This is the Tennant site. It is really a drowned hammock. Wan Chi's harbor is right over here. This is Great Gut. A little curling one that you see going out here, that's the natural gut. And then, of course, the 1950s canals that cut right down through it and drain the marshes. What has happened is in this marsh surrounded area is that the marsh buffers the dynamics of the water and tides and the wind. And as sea level rises, then it builds up, and the site is actually inundated. So what we have at the site is the 400 AD, which is the first time the site was occupied, the 400 AD beginning of the site is now 20 centimeters below sea level, so much so that we had to actually pump the site to excavate. And of course, it comes on up to the Collington phase, and probably was not here at the moment of the English colony, or they would have said something about it. But this is one that Talcott Williams visited, and it appears on the 1852 shoreline map of the Collington. Things like the 1563 coin from over here at Breakwood are simply chance drops and have absolutely nothing to do with particular elements of the colony itself. They are interesting, but we spend a lot of time following up leads like this that simply will take us nowhere. And finally, Bald Point, obviously had an Indian village at one time, if we can believe the statements that the shoreline, that Indian, quote, Indian skeletons were removed from the shoreline. But surprisingly enough, Bald Point today on the geological map looks very much like Bald Point did on the 1840 map, which should tell us that even through the little pond in here, I don't think the fish house is still there anymore, but it was in 1840, very interesting. But it certainly has not known through the erosional patterns that some of the other parts of the shoreline, and I think for archaeological and geological purposes, we need to understand that erosion has, and Bob Dolan made this point, has not been constant everywhere. You can't automatically say that this average erosion has gone on. If that were the case, then some of the things that we know to be in place would not be in place today. Thank you.
Very long, but it's one that I think we'll all find very interesting. Should I say it's in the experimental phases yet? Nick Lucati from the Senior Company Foundation. We're working on trying to computerize the map, the historic map. And this is a very difficult problem. I thought computers were supposed to do everything, you know, stick it in there and it just make it all come out. It's not quite that easy, but we would like to show you what we have done so far, and just to give you some idea of how this is being approached, and hopefully in the future we'll have some more exacting information, which could surprise the small pieces of the puzzle. Yeah.